What are you driving at?
Only that a fellow's never sorry when his creditor is dead. Nielsen turned red.
Clinch wouldn't take another man's life. None of them would. Charlie Frost, come off it, Joe. The man's a mouse.
You can't tell from looking at a man what he's capable of doing. And you certainly can't tell what he's done.
This kind of speculation, Nielsen began, but he did not know what form his protestation was to take, and he again fell silent. Nielsen did not know the vanished prospector, Emery Staines, at all well, though if asked, he would have declared the opposite, for Nielsen tended to profess intimacy whenever it flattered him to do so, and Staines was very much the kind of man with whom Nielsen would have liked to forge an intimate acquaintance. Nielsen loved to be dazzled, and never was he more dazzled than by the selfhood of a man he very much admired. Emery Staines, being possessed of both youth and conviction, was naturally an enviable type. Calling him to mind now, Nielsen had to agree with Pritchard that it was exceedingly unlikely that Staines had departed Hokitika in secret, of his own volition, in the middle of the night. His claims required constant maintenance and supervision, and there were more than 50 men in his employment. Why, his absence would be costing more than pennies, Nielsen thought, and the debt would be mounting every day. No, Pritchard was right. Staines had either been kidnapped or, far more likely, he had been killed, and his body had been very effectively concealed. The current information held that Emery Staines had last been seen around sundown on the 14th of January, walking south down Revel Street in the direction of his house. What happened after that, nobody knew. His barber came calling at 8 the next morning and found his door unlocked. He reported that the bed was rumpled, as if recently slept in, but the fire was cold. All valuables were present and untouched. Emery Staines had no enemies, as far as Nielsen was aware. His disposition was bright and very open, and he had the rare gift of managing to act both generously and humbly at once. He was very rich, but there were many rich men in Hokitika, and most of them were a good deal more unpleasant than he. It was unusual that he was young, of course, and that might be a cause for envy in an older, more disappointed man. But envy was rather a weak motive for murder, Nielsen thought, if indeed the young man had been killed. "What would drive any man to quarrel with Staines?" Nielsen said aloud. "That boy radiates luck. The Midas touch he has."
"Luck is not a virtue."
"Killed for his money, then?"
"Let's put Staines aside for the moment." Pritchard leant forward. "You took home a fair cut of Crosby Wells' fortune."
"Yes, I told you, 10%, Nielsen said, turning back to the yellow bill of sale on the desk before him. "Commission on the sale of his effects, you know. But now that the will's been disputed, the payment's void. I shall have to pay it all back again. The property ought not to have been sold."
He touched the edge of the bill with his finger. He had signed the document and its copy at this very desk 2 weeks prior, and how his heart had sunk as he had penned his name. In Hokitika, the sale of effects on a deceased estate was never a profitable venture, but his business was not prospering, and he was desperate. How shameful it was, he had thought, to have travelled half the girth of the globe only to see his fortunes fall so far, only to scrabble for scraps beneath the tables of richer, luckier men. The name on the bill, Crosby Wells, had meant nothing to him. From what he knew, Wells was just a loner, a wretched twist of a man who drank himself into a stupor every night and dreamed of nothing. Nielsen signed his name in bitterness, in exhaustion. He was going to have to rent a horse, sacrifice a day of work, ride out, where? To the forsaken Arahura, and pick over this dead man's effects as a vagrant trawls through a gutter looking for food. And then, wedged into the flour canister, the powder box, the meat safe, the bellows, the cracked basin of an old commode, and all of it glistering, heavy and soft. His commission had come in at just over £400. For the first time in his life he was flush. He might have packed up and sailed to Sydney. He might have returned home. He might have begun anew. He might have married. but he had no time to enjoy it. The day his commission was finally cleared was the very day of Mrs. Wells' arrival. Within hours, the sale of the estate had been appealed, the inheritance disputed, and the fortune seized by the bank. If the appeal was granted, as it certainly would be, Nielsen would be obliged to pay his commission back again in full. £400! It was more money than he earned in a year. He ran his finger down the edge of the bill and felt a lonely stab of outrage. He wished, as he had wished many times in the last week, that he could be given someone to blame. But Pritchard was shaking his head. He wasn't interested in the dead man's will, nor in the legal implications of its contest. "Never mind all that for the moment," he said. "Think back to the cottage. You saw the pile with your own eyes."
"I was the one to discover it."
Nielsen spoke with a touch of pride. He relaxed a little at the memory.
"Oh, if you'd seen it, I might have turned it into leaf and covered a whole billiard table, legs and all, heavy as anything, and how it shone!"
Pritchard didn't smile. "You said that it wasn't dust and it wasn't nugget. Do I have that right?" Nielsen sighed.
"Yes, that's right. It had all been pressed into squares."
"Retorted," Pritchard said, nodding, "which takes equipment and skill. So who was the smith? Not Wells himself." Nielsen paused. This was a point that had not crossed his mind. The way that Pritchard was setting forth his argument, confidently, arrogantly, was unpleasant to him, but he had to concede that the chemist had made several connections already that he himself had missed. He sucked on his pipe. Nielsen had no great knowledge of the workings of a goldfield. He had only attempted to prospect for the colour once, and found it miserable work, lugging pails of water to and from the river to sluice the stones, slapping at the sandflies that crept up his jacket until he was mad enough to dance. Afterwards his back ached, and his fingers stung, and his feet stayed spongy and swollen for days. The pinch of grit he had taken home, knotted into the corner of his kerchief, was taxed and taxed and then weighed to the smallest fraction of an ounce, yielding at last 5 dirty shillings, an impossible disappointment, barely enough to cover the rental of his horse to and from the gorge. Nielsen did not try his luck again. He was by natural faculty and self-styling a Renaissance man, accustomed to showing immediate promise in whatever field to which he applied himself. If he did